This event came about because students finally recalled their speeches from their sophomore year and wanted to continue a study on public speaking. This event has been fully produced by students of this class, and we couldn't be more excited to share it with you all tonight. As the night gets underway, we kindly ask that you please refrain from any photography or videography, as there will be a full recording of the event published later online. Without further ado, our first speaker of the night will be Zoe Gravett. To kick off our first ever SDL Luminary event, Zoe will speak on how nutrition has positively impacted her identity as a female athlete. Zoe is a senior here at Granville and is attending the University of Tennessee as a nursing major next year. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Zoe Gravett to the stage.
I have always loved sports cars, whether it's an Audi, a Jag, or a Porsche. I've always been fascinated at how fast they go and the mechanisms that they use. However, in order for these cars to be able to do all the things that they do, they need premium fuel. Say I go out and buy myself a brand new 2025 Jag, I'm not going to roll up to the pump and put regular fuel in it. I'm going to put premium fuel in my new luxury vehicle. Just like sports cars, we also need premium fuel. What we put into our bodies directly affects us both mentally and physically, which then affects our identity. Hello, I'm so happy you're all here tonight. My name is Zoe Gravett, and I'm a senior here at Granville, and I'm so happy to be a part of this class of wonderful people. As far as my background goes, I have been playing sports my whole life. In high school, I've played field hockey and lacrosse, and have really, really loved lacrosse. I started playing in third grade because of my older siblings, but I didn't really love it at the time, so I thought, you know, I'm dramatic, I love to sing, I love to be all the things, so I'm going to try theater. So I did just that. I loved it for a really, really long time, and I loved being able to be on the stage and express myself, but it wasn't giving me the same spark as getting out on the field and scoring goals and winning games that was. So I decided that I'd go back to lacrosse. I'm beyond grateful that I did that. I came back in seventh grade, and lacrosse has given me so many things in this life. As far as the lessons, it's taught me how to work hard, it's taught me how to be a good teammate, and it's taught me how to be empathetic. And it's also given me lifelong friendships that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. However, it didn't teach me how to properly fuel myself. Naturally, I love junk food. And if you ask my mom, I could and I probably did eat ice cream for every meal for a period of time. However, these foods are not setting me up for success. As an athlete, I needed to be putting better things into my body. So at the end of field hockey this year, I decided that I should take it upon myself to research what I should really be putting into my body. So after doing some researching, I decided that a high-protein diet with a focus on whole foods would be best for me. Along with that, in SDL, we do this project called 20 Times. So we spend 20% of our time working on something that we're passionate about. So normally, every Friday, we all get together and we are working on a project. Mine is a cookbook. So I kind of took my passion of nutrition and bettering myself and put it into this project. So any recipe that I felt good eating or that I really enjoyed, I just put into this cookbook. So hopefully at the end of the year, I'll be able to share a final product with all of you. This transition in my health, in my nutrition, has made a massive improvement on my overall health and athletic performance. Like I was saying before, I wasn't really eating very well, so I was feeling very groggy, tired, and unmotivated. But now that I have decided and do eat better foods, I'm feeling physically energized, strong, less bloated, and better skin, and no more lactose problems. Before, I was highly lactose intolerant, but now I can eat all the dairy that I want. And this physical change has really helped me mentally. Mentally, I'm feeling happier, more confident, and most importantly, like myself. My mental health improvement has helped me learn who I am as a person. In Granville, we've had the amazing opportunity to grow up with people our entire lives. So most of my classmates I've known for most of my life. And seeing them come into themselves and become the people that they are has been truly an amazing experience. But it's also taught me that identity is unique to every single person. So for me, I highly identify with the sports that I play. I love lacrosse and I truly use it as a way to express myself, but there are other things that define me. I love to sing, I love to cook, I love to hang out with my friends, and I love to do so many other things than play sports. So even though this nutrition was really, for me, more for my athletic performance, it has helped me in so many other aspects of my identity. So going back to what I've said this whole speech, what we put into our bodies directly affects us both mentally and physically, therefore affecting our identity. Bad food equals bad mood. If we're putting bad things into our body, we're gonna feel bad, and then we're gonna feel bad, and then we're gonna play bad. Good food equals good mood. If I'm putting great food into my body, I'm going to feel great and I'm going to be like, wow, I have the energy to go out and win this game and score a couple goals. And then I'm going to know who I am. I'm going to be like, yeah, I am that girl. I just scored 3 goals. Okay. So if I'm feeling this way, my confidence is going to be at an all-time high. Therefore, others will see me that way. If I'm exuding this amazing confidence because I feel that way about myself, other people will feel the same way about you. We are what we eat. And even though this entire speech I've been preaching about, you know, putting great foods in our body, it's all about moderation. Like I said before, I love junk food and I love Dairy Queen and I love Mexican food. So I still eat those things, but in moderation. Say after lacrosse practice, my teammates invite me out to go get food and I know it's going to make me feel bad. I'm not going to pass up the opportunity because the opportunity to spend time with people that I love is still going to be feeding me mentally. So it's not about restriction. It's all about moderation. Just like putting premium fuel in a sports car, putting proper fuel into our body makes our systems fire properly. So be that sports car or the racehorse or the person that you've always wanted to be through proper nutrition. Thank you.
Let's hear it one more time for Zoe. Next up, James Robinson aims to emphasize the importance and imperfections throughout the history of MAPS. James is a junior who prides himself on being the president of art club, along with being a thespian here at Granville. Because of the fact that James is a junior, he has not made a final decision on where he will be attending next year. However, he hopes to pursue a career in education. Please welcome to the stage, James Robinson.
Okay. I have a question for you all. Are any of you planning to go on transatlantic journeys with only a map and a compass to guide you? Columbus? Okay, other than the few who said yes, most likely you're probably not. Because of course not. We have GPS and all of these new inventions. But this map behind me is used for exactly that purpose. But this is the map you'll see on Google Maps. This is the map you will see in your classrooms. This is the map you probably have at home. Why? Our identity and where we come from, our biases and everything, heavily influence our maps. Gerardus Mercator, the inventor of this map, invented it a long time ago, pioneering a lot of new stuff, but mainly worked to prioritize the size of countries, especially their shapes. In doing this, it allowed you to sail from one spot to another with only a compass, which was very useful for the Europeans coming to colonize the New World. That's why we still use this map. Because of the fact that our previous people who came here and the people who a lot of us hail from used it. But now it's useless. In fact, it even changes our perception of the world. This map here greatly distorts the area of countries. If you look at it, you'll see Greenland and Africa seem roughly the same size, when in reality, Africa is 14 times larger, greatly disparaging our view of the world. Another map by Gal Peter, called Gal Peter's Map, changes that perspective. Now, if you notice and look at these countries, they're incredibly stretched and distorted because it's impossible to flatten a sphere onto a flat plane. Thus, both of these two had to sacrifice something in order to get what they wanted. Mercator wanted to prioritize the shape of countries, while Galpeter wanted to prioritize the area. Both of them, though, had one thing in common. Borders. Both of those maps displayed imaginary lines. Why? Well, according to Pew Research Study, 80% of Americans describe themselves as patriotic. Thus, when we are making maps that matter to us, we are putting countries on it because our identity and our country is important to us as Americans. These biases heavily influence every map we see. But if we lived in a world that had a different perspective, and instead cared more about culture, we might expect to see a map like this. We can even use this to track throughout all time. Interestingly enough, Mercator also pioneered something else. North is up. When you think about it, it doesn't actually make sense. Why north? See, this map probably looks really wrong to you, but it's just flipped upside down. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but yet this map still feels wrong. In fact, throughout most of history, you would expect to see maps similar to this, or most of the time actually, with maps facing east as up, because of the fact that the sun rises in the east. We can know this because we can read ancient texts and they'll say that they are sailing east and describe east as up. And thus, we know that that's what their maps used as up. We see this in ancient China, in ancient Middle Eastern countries. We see this everywhere. And until, again, Gaulpeter, that was mainly the standard. Again, showing how our colonial past heavily influences the things we accept today. Really interestingly, we can use that to track changes throughout history. This map here was published in 1808 and is a map of Ohio, published in Philadelphia. You notice it probably doesn't look like a map you'll see today. Number one, it's especially missing roads. But what's interestingly enough on this map is coal. Because of the fact that this is when the United States was going through its Industrial Revolution. People who were coming here from Philadelphia to Ohio, this is what was important to them. Where the cities were, where the rivers were, and especially where the resources were. So they would use maps like this, and they would have maps created like this. Their bias and their needs affected their maps. We can look back even farther to a map from 1505, published in Nuremberg, Germany, which is right around here. I don't know if you necessarily recognize where this map is from because of how wrong it is. None of this really exists. This is all horribly wrong. But it didn't matter because the people in 1505 from Nuremberg, Germany didn't really need to care about Nordic countries. So most of the stuff around Nuremberg is pretty correct. But when you get farther out, they stopped prioritizing it as much. All of these things are affected by our own personal bias. And they affect our bias still. But it doesn't just pertain to maps. As we look throughout everything in our lives, we take these things as facts, and they aren't really. As I've shown you, these maps are wrong. They are distorted or just blatantly have land that doesn't exist. But you've probably never stopped to question a map. You've probably never stopped to question what your friend just said to you. You probably never stopped to question what your teacher just said. You probably never stopped to question what you read in a book. We take these things as fact when they can often be wrong. So it's important that as we look at these things and as we look at what we accept as fact, that we question them. Thank you.
Give it up for James one more time. Speaking next in our SDL luminary is Cheyenne Leskis. Cheyenne will speak on how her experiences with religion have impacted her identity as a young adult. Cheyenne is a senior here at Granville and is undecided on where she will be attending next year. Ladies and gentlemen, Cheyenne Leskis.
Hi. Thank you, Elliot, for the lovely introduction. I just want to say I'm very thankful for you all coming here and showing up today and giving us the support and just being amazing people overall. Besides that, let me begin my speech. I have always seen myself as the weird kid. Yeah. An outcast, even. And as I have matured, I have realized that was never truly a bad thing. Yes, I grew up feeling isolated, but that has only made me more independently mature and strong as an individual. I now see myself as a sort of philosopher, if you will, opening my eyes and seeing the world around me, allowing a whole new perception on life. As a child, I grew up in a Greek Orthodox church, and my mom was and still is a very hardcore Christian. Not hardcore, but, you know, hardcore. As a child, religion was confusing for me, as it was for most, and I felt conformed to something that I didn't necessarily understand or believe in. I was sort of a sheep. I blindly followed along to fit in with my family standards, doing anything to please them. For a while, I put myself to the idea of me being a disappointment, that if I didn't believe in what so many others around me believed in, I'd be ostracized. I wouldn't be accepted in this society. I slowly started to hate religion because of this, and the way it conformed me to a society that I hated. I noticed something similar to how I felt in growing up around in the people around me. I see it honestly every day. We all tend to fear the same thing. Rejection, abandonment, and disappointment. Despite these fears creeping upon me growing up, I now find myself embracing them, allowing my peers to categorize me, because why would I want to no longer be myself? To fit in, why should I be forced to follow in something that I don't find fit to me? As much as I disliked the ideals of religion there for a while, I grew up and I began exploring, finding myself in all sorts of religions and realizing that I have a lot of the same ideals as some of them. But once again, I felt I didn't fit. I couldn't just follow one set of guidelines and not allow myself a full view on life. I feel a lot of people need to learn to step out of their comfort zones and step into the unknown of the world and accept uncertainty. For these guidelines religion and even society holds will only set you back at times from seeing the whole picture. I see my free spirit and caring nature tends to scare the people around me. I see their eyes on me, and I hear the laughter that tends to echo in my ears late at night. These laughs used to scare me. I hated myself, I hated the world, and the people in it. I felt it was unfair, and that there was no point of continuing on. I could never be myself. So I tried to leave. For a week, I was in the hospital, alone with my thoughts, and all that hate that had been boiling up inside of me kind of just took over. But I couldn't blame anyone, because it was one person's fault. And with lots of intense therapy, I learned something that truly resonated with me. No one can make you feel a certain way. Only you can make yourself feel that way. With this being said to me, I realized that I spent my whole life freaking out, caring way too much about what others thought and their opinions, and that I don't need to be falling in something I don't believe in to try and fit in. It's okay to be outcasted, and it's okay to be your own thing. It's okay to just sit back and realize I am my own person and that I don't have to be something that everyone else wants me to be. And I feel that's something that a lot of people need to know. Thank you.
I lost my makeup.
Cheyenne?
What? Sorry.
Following Cheyenne, Lonnie Castle will speak on how being identified as a gifted student in Central Ohio has impacted their identity. Lonnie is a junior who is a thespian here at Granville and will most likely be studying creative writing in college. Ladies and gentlemen, Lonnie Castle.
There's something odd about birds. They're regarded as both intelligent and stupid and generally weird, But that isn't what we tend to remember about birds. What we tend to remember are their wings, the way their feathers bend and float and keep them in the air. Flying, it's such a foreign concept to us that we've been trying to manufacture it for most of our history. From Daedalus and Icarus to the modern airplane, we're obsessed with the sky. But why? When there are so many wonderful things here on the ground. For example, the hit Disney Channel TV show Phineas and Ferb. Let's talk about them for a second. Because if the boys were real instead of geometric cartoons, then three things would be true. One, they or their parents would be extremely in debt. Two, they would be in a juvenile detention center because their inventions certainly don't meet any governmental safety standards. And three, they would have the record for the quickest gifted and talented identifications in history. And while the boys would certainly be better challenged in a more advanced environment, I can't help but think that they would encounter a similar issue that I did when I was 8. My gifted and talented identification has stalked me since before it was officially stamped on my record. In Columbus City Schools, CCS, where I'm from, every student who has that certain spark, they call it intelligence, but I think it's just anxiety, is pulled out of class at some point, sat down, and presented with a test. Typically, this test is for either reading or math. If you're like me, both. To be perfectly honest, I expected to be identified. So it didn't really come as a surprise when we got the news a couple weeks into the summer. I was officially a certified nerd. By fifth grade, I was identified as gifted in reading, math, science, social studies, and superior cognitive logic. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Back to second grade. In CCS, unbeknownst to me, a new plot was brewing. They called it Columbus Gifted Academy, or CGA for short. The idea was that CGA would be a safe haven for all the kids, gifted kids in the district, third through eighth, where we could be educated the way we needed without being pulled out of our classes or isolated from our peers. Looking back, I'm grateful for the opportunity to learn from educators equipped to adapt to me, but I'm skeptical of the execution. When I showed up to school on my first day of third grade, I assumed that CGA would be the place where I was no longer the weird, little-er kid who spoke too much and who had all of the answers. I was ready to fail. In general, I feel like I've been bracing for failure my entire life. But much to my detriment, I only flourished further at CGA, bounds ahead of the peers who I thought were supposed to be just as passionate, just as motivated, just as weird as I was. It was alienating. So I made the choice to isolate myself further. Instead of finding a productive way to love myself, I changed my mindset. I made my intelligence my identity. I spent 5 years at CGA molding myself into the model student. I stood out by choice. Unfortunately, it wasn't sustainable. When COVID hit, I was in seventh grade and widely regarded as an academic nuclear force. In sixth grade, my team and I won the district's debate tournament, and I won the Outstanding Attorney Award at my state middle school mock trial event. And then, a couple months before the world shut down in seventh grade, I accomplished the thing that my entire life seemed to have been leading up to. There's this competition in Central Ohio called the Martin Luther King Jr. Youth Oratorical Event. I placed second at districts, but they weren't quite done with me yet. At the same time as the state was running their competition, my district was holding a very similar race. But this time, the prize was different. Every January, the Columbus Convention Center hosts the largest MLK Jr. breakfast event in the country to celebrate the life and teachings of MLK, around 5,000 people. And every year, my district sends one student to speak on its behalf. In 2020, that student was me. The runner-up, a sophomore in high school. I was 12. Unfortunately, the euphoria didn't last. I was running out of time and facing the same fate that every so-called gifted kid must face. Burnout. Imagine you're one of the birds from the beginning. You're small, virtually unremarkable, but you have this very special skill. Whenever you fly, the wind always supports you. It doesn't matter how high you jump, you hardly need to flap your wings, and you can do the most beautiful tricks and accomplish the most daring feats. There's no need for you to be careful, so you get more and more daring. You start asking the wind to help you do things you were never meant to do. It's desperate to please, so it exhausts more and more of itself in order to help you fly, until one day you open your wings and you jump, and there's no wind to catch your fall. In fact, there's no wind whatsoever. You have no idea how to fly because you were never taught how. They just assumed you knew because you were so good at staying in the sky. When, in fact, you never really had wings to begin with. So you fall. That bird was me in March of 7th grade, one jump away from a painful collision with the ground. But before I could make contact, I got lucky. Kind of. COVID gave me, as well as many others, a new perspective. I was done being the smart kid. I was done being gifted. Don't get me wrong, I didn't want to be normal, but I wanted to reach the sky through my own ability, not be presented the sun on a silver platter. So I began searching for my wings. The first time I wrote something someone cared about, that was when I thought to myself, so this is what flying feels like. Public speaking, it had always come easy to me, but writing could be a little touch and go. For anything productive to come from my pen, I had to have the right mixture of passion, grief, and anxiety brewing in my brain. Brewing in my brain. But when eighth grade rolled around, I was in Granville and entirely online. I spent that year in a sort of stasis, just me, my bedroom, and my stories. My awful, really quite appalling stories. But they got better. I got better. When freshman year rolled around, I had almost formed a new version of myself, virtually unrecognizable to the person I was before. I was brash and confident and kind and funny and smart. My gifted and talented identification was still creeping with my shadow. I was taking all advanced classes and hardly finding any of them challenging, but something was different. Somehow my academic success mattered less. And then, when I found theater, I found a passionate rival for the spot of my top special interest. But the thrill that reverberates through my bones when the stage lights hit me, it's still outmatched by presenting my writing to someone, a product of all that I am, and seeing them smile. For the past 3 years, writing has been it for me. It's hard, and it's not always rewarding, but it is always a challenge. And when I do succeed, even when I don't, it is always worth it. So here's my challenge to you. Find the thing that's worth failing for, that's worth falling for, whatever that is. You don't have to be a writer or be a set of uber-talented cartoon brothers and build a roller coaster, but find your own way to make the most of every minute, and you may just start sprouting feathers.
Let's hear it for Lottie one more time. To close our event tonight, Spencer Beckett will speak on how something as small as a peanut allergy can have a significant impact on one's identity. Spencer is a senior here at Granville High School and is one of the most achieving students I know. Spencer does not yet know where he will be attending next year, but is looking to study mechanical engineering. Ladies and gentlemen, Spencer Beckett.
All right, thank you, Elliot. Let's give him another round of applause. Yeah, there we go. Hope you're all doing well tonight. Here I am, yeah. Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. That was the day I officially found out that I had a peanut allergy. growing up, I always knew I had some mild form, and that really didn't prevent me from living my own life to the fullest. I still shot Nerf guns, still ate ice cream and all the amazing snacks you can as a kid. And the first day that I really experienced that was when I was about 3 years old, three or four. My sister took a peanut butter cracker and shoved it straight into my face. I swelled up like a balloon, and with a little bit of medicine, I was okay. So, does anybody remember the peanut free table?
Yes.
Yeah? Yeah. I did not sit at the peanut free table. Thank God. I was terrified that my identity would be permanently stained if I was anywhere associated with the peanut free table. So there I sat, risking my life because I knew that if people knew that I had a peanut allergy, my identity would be destroyed, completely out the window. Fast forward a little bit to junior year. This is when I started applying to the Air Force and Naval Academies. I tell the medical examiner that I may or may not have a peanut allergy. I didn't have it tested at the time, but I figured rather be safe than sorry. So they prescribed me a skin test, did the prick, positive. Then they did the blood test, did the prick, positive. Then I sat down and faced my biggest fear. I ate a spoonful of peanut butter. That was the scariest thing in the world to me. And I still tested positive. This means that now that I have this on my record, I have pretty low chances of getting into a service academy, which is what I had been working so hard to achieve. Throughout my entire high school career, I had worked so hard to become a leader, and all of my efforts had been towards the service academies. All of that to be taken away by a stupid little nut. Or a legume. Is it a legume? It comes out of the ground, whatever. This put me in a dark state for quite a few weeks, since I based my entire identity off of getting into the service academies. Felt like all of it was down the drain. You may be asking, why didn't I test earlier? Well, honestly, I probably should have, now looking back on it, but I feel that had I gotten tested earlier, there's a chance that I would not have worked as hard, because it's likely that I wouldn't have even tried to apply in the first place. This experience shaped my new perspective on life. I came to the conclusion that our identities are full of good and bad experiences. Our identities are also formed by the relationships that we have. This SDL class right here that put on this event is a perfect example of how people from different parts of the school can represent different beliefs, different cliques, different perspectives, and different personalities, and how ultimately we can come together to work towards a common goal. So normally the world asks us to put aside our differences to work together, but I believe that we must embrace our differences and use them to work together and support each other to be the best version of ourselves. Ultimately, I decided that I wanted to assess what I wanted to see within my own personal relationships, and I encourage any of you to do the same if you haven't already done so. I had to dig deep to figure out what I wanted my senior year and the rest of my life to look like. I began thinking to myself, when I'm older, I want to have a great group of friends that I can tell anything to and will support me, but also keep it real with me. I've been acting on it quite a bit. I started building connections with those who I don't talk to as much, and I stopped forcing myself to water the dead plants, the people that I don't really converse with and don't want to converse back. But I realized that I made a grave mistake. When I'm older, all of us say when I'm older. Why? When I'm older, I'll travel. When I'm older, I'll create that business. When I'm older, I'll hike up that mountain. When I'm older, I'll chase my dreams. Obviously, there are so many things that we must wait for since we're young adults, and we're simply too young and lack the experience to do these things. But for most of our other aspirations, why do we wait? Why do you wait until you're retired to travel? Why do you wait to create that business? Why do you wait to hike up that mountain? Why do you wait so long to chase your dreams? Like most other teenagers, I spent a lot of time on TikTok, almost too much time. And I've gone onto the side where I'll be scrolling and I'll get motivational posts, and I'll end up reposting them so other people can see them. And Zoe can attest, she likes all of my posts. One of my favorite videos has an important quote that I actually repeat to myself on a daily basis to remind myself. People wait all day for 5 p.m., all week for Friday, all summer for winter, and all winter for summer, and all life for happiness. Don't let the pursuit of tomorrow diminish the joy of today. I'm most known for being a disciplined and hard worker, which means that I'm most focused on setting myself up for the future, whereas others may not so as much. My pursuit of relentless self-improvement may be beneficial in the long run, but I often find that I spend so much time prepping for the future, maybe too much, that I'm often left unsatisfied and trying to find more work to fill the void, because I ultimately forget to live today. Each of us have different identities that hold us to different standards, and that can affect the course of our entire lives, because that's all identities really are, is how we choose to live our lives. Students having identity crises as juniors and seniors, it's pretty common when the pressure gets put on and the stakes are high. Between ACT and SAT tests, AP classes, athletics, clubs, extracurriculars, friendships, relationships, and that thing we all fear, college. So much changes when we get to be about 17 to 18 years old, and it may feel like the cards are stacked against you, but everybody goes through this phase. Once you get over the hump, it doesn't really get easier. You just become stronger as a person. So once you figure out who you truly are, you can start to assess how you'll be able to tackle these challenges. Each of us in this SDL class have different paths in life. I've been on the path for self-improvement for so long that I almost lost myself in pursuit of my high goals. Cheyenne, for example, has an admirable level of ambition in her passions, art and nature. Owen, Kara, and Elliot all have worked relentlessly to get athletic offers to compete at the next level. Lonnie uses her writing as an outlet to pursue at the higher level. Most of us are still searching, and that's completely okay, because our lives are a constant search for our identities. They're constantly changing. Those who we spend our time with, the activities that we do, the values and the morals that we have, all of these change based on our experiences, and they ultimately shape you to be who you are and who you will become in the future. My entire SDL project has been searching for my own identity, but my end goal is to inspire others to do the same. Ultimately, I want to use this experience to bring people together and to enlighten others. And because you have to know, when you're going through a hard time and it feels like the cards are stacked against you, you're ultimately going through a life-changing process and you'll be better in the long run. It's actively shaping your identity and building you to become who you truly are. Another TikTok video that I watched, Alexis Carroll quoted, "Man cannot remake himself without suffering, for he is both the marble and the sculptor." You cannot become better without taking the bad with the good. Everything that happens makes you who you are today, and it sets you up for life further down the road. When I found out that I was allergic to peanuts, my life seemed to completely flip upside down. I was originally identified with the idea of becoming a military officer, hopefully flying fighter jets like Top Gun, ooh, and having an incredible career that I could use to inspire other people. So, here's my kryptonite. This is my kryptonite. But ultimately, it's part of my identity. I'm going to set this down now. I have my EpiPen in my bag. It's okay. Sorry, one second. Like I said, my peanut allergy is ultimately part of my identity. I'll never truly know if I'm supposed to be a fighter pilot until it really happens, and I'm going to keep working towards that. And if it doesn't happen, that just means that I have a different path in life, because our paths are constantly changing, and with them, so are the parts of our identities. Note how I said part of my identity. One simply is not one thing. Zoe is not just a lacrosse player. She's a girl who is talented in multiple ways. Has anybody heard her sing? She's incredible. I second that. Cheyenne is not just an artist. She's a charming person with a big personality that loves nature. And Mrs. Smith is not just a teacher. She's a role model for our generation. She guides us down the right paths and sets up for success in multiple ways. The same can be said about everybody in this room and everybody who's worked to set up this project. So just as I may or may not be a soon-to-be Air Force cadet, none of us are our sport, art, or profession. Identities are just so much more complex than that. And that's what makes each of us ordinary, or extraordinary, sorry, not ordinary. Many look for the key to a successful life, and there's really no such thing. I've been searching, and there's no formula. There's no prescribed way for each of us to live our lives. So that means that we have the freedom to do as we please. Zoe likes to eat nourishing food to feel her best, and I would hope that you all do the same. James, talking about his maps, we may be proud of our heritage. And as with Cheyenne, maybe we all have different beliefs or believe in different religions. But we can all embrace what makes us different and break through our labels as Lonnie did, to come together to use our differences and make the world a better place by showing empathy and forming strong relationships. Firstly, we must accept ourselves. We must accept that we are who we are, and you live in your whole life, you live your whole life in your body, and you may as well be happy with yourself. Secondly, we must accept change. It's imperative to be happy with yourself, but don't resist change. It may be scary, but those of us who are confident enough to get past that fear, of the fear of failure, and accept change with open arms, can truly appreciate life for what it is. Thank you.
Let's hear it for Spencer one more time. And then we're going to give one final applause to all the speakers tonight, just how amazing they were. Yeah, you're good. That concludes our first ever STL Luminary event. We hope you all enjoyed hearing about how some of our students' identities have been developed and impacted through their years as a Granville student. As you leave tonight, we hope you take a look into your own identity and reflect on how it has been formed and altered through your life. Thank you.